welcome back to the I'm Moving to Italy podcast. This is Nathan Heinrich, and I would like to welcome you back to Season 4, Episode 13. My friends, this is my final week in the United States before returning to Italy. This is Thanksgiving week, and in about, 8 days, so 1 week from tomorrow, I will be back in Italy. Last year, I returned to Italy alone, and I was in Italy alone for about 3 weeks before Alessandro came and joined me. Well, not only am I returning to Italy alone again this year, I'm going to be in Italy alone for the foreseeable future. Now, the reason for this is very simple, and it's just because Alessandro is not legally allowed to be outside of the United States while he is applying for U.S. citizenship. He's been out of the United States for a much more lengthy period of time than we expected. Before the pandemic, and before he was helping his family with some medical issues in Italy, he was planning on becoming a citizen probably 2 years ago, because that's when he was eligible. But because he has spent the last year and a half or so outside of the United States, off and on, it wasn't continuous, but he's been traveling a lot and been in Italy a lot for that period, he kind of has to reset the clock. And so he kind of, even though there's a certain waiver and there's a grace period, and supposedly they could give you basically 2 years if you have the correct exemptions and all that. But without getting into too many details about what it takes to get citizenship in the United States, he is going to be staying in the United States for potentially the next year and a half or so. He'll be able to visit Italy, but he will not be living in Italy permanently. He is not going to be an Italian resident. He is truly a resident in the United States and has to stay until he gets a citizenship. Once he gets his U.S. citizenship, then we'll be able to go back to our kind of regular schedule of sort of splitting the year between Italy and the United States. So, how do I feel about that? Well, of course, immediately I feel, I don't want to say anxiety, but I do feel a bit of apprehension, maybe. Now, when I was going back to Italy the first time by myself, I had Italian school to return to that was occupying me, and I knew Alessandro was coming within a very short period of time. It was basically, you know, that period of time between Thanksgiving and Christmas. That's only a few weeks, so I knew it was a short period. This is a whole different story. This is basically me living in Italy, him living in the United States. And some people will be like, well, how is that even possible? How are you doing that? Why are you doing that? You know, I could never do that, or my relationship would never last. You know, here's the way I see it. It's not ideal. Certainly not ideal. I would like to be in the same place Alessandro is. I don't want to live a single life. I've lived a single life enough in the past. Those days are over. Now I'm in a committed relationship, and I love being with Alessandro. That's my priority. However, I know that throughout history, human beings that were married, they kind of were forced to be apart from each other, whether it was due to war or due to, you know, one family member taking care of the kids at home and the other one going away to work, whether it was moving to a new country or living far away from the family and sending money back home, whatever. I guess what I'm trying to say is, I don't even want to try to compare myself to, you know, wartime situation where, you know, one person is at war and the other person stays home. That's not, we're not dealing with that. We're not in crisis. This is not even on the same level as any of that. So I'm not going to complain about it. Although it's not ideal, it's temporary, even though it's a long-term temporary, it's still temporary. So how am I choosing to sort of mentally prepare for that? Well, I am certainly studying Italian. Being in the United States for the last period of time, my Italian has sort of gone on pause. I've still been taking my coaching lessons with Vera. I've still been using the Babbel language app. But I've also been sort of in sort of vacation mode a little bit. I've been visiting people, I've been visiting family, I've been speaking almost exclusively English, except for when I'm talking to Alessandro in Italian, and we're practicing. But, you know, we're in the United States, I don't hear Italian being spoken, and so, therefore, my Italian is not really growing the way I would like it to. But I'm going to be going back to Italy, and it's going to once again become a primary focus of mine, or one of my primary focuses, is to really, really sort of crest the hill and really get past the point of being semi-fluent and, you know, having a grasp on Italian so that I have survivable Italian skills, rather than like the kind of Italian where I can sit down without any stress or anxiety and have a meal with strangers or with new friends and be able to carry on a conversation without using my translator or any of that. So that's what I want to do. I want to get to that point. I also have a lot of work. Basically, everything in my life right now revolves around Italy. My work with my podcast, of course. I can't really continue a podcast called I'm Moving to Italy when I'm not even in Italy. I have at least one season left. This is probably going to end up being a 5-season podcast, and where we're going to, you know, cap it off in 2023 with the 5 seasons. That's going to finish in the coming year. So that's one thing that I'm working on. I've also got All Roads Lead to Italy, which is basically an online magazine that I have been working on and continue to work on, and that is growing, and I'm putting efforts into that. So that requires a lot of writing, that requires work. That's under that same umbrella, of course, is Real News from Italy. And even though I've sort of just taken a several week pause because I'm not in Italy, I can't really report from Italy, so I've taken a little bit of a break. My very first time of taking a break since starting writing Real News from Italy. So when I get back there, I'm going to be doing all of that, learning Italian, and also searching for a place, you know, our final place. I've really kind of decided that I need to just call it what it is. I want to have a farm in Italy. I don't want to just have a villa. I don't want to have just a little apartment up in Venice like what we have now. I want to have a farm. And so we've been spending the last 2 years almost now really getting to know the different places in Italy and sort of just figuring out where. Well, having said that, one of the other things that I'm really excited about when I get back to Italy, and even though I'm going to be doing it alone, I'm still really excited about it, is there are some pieces of property that we have honed in on, and I'm going to take you along with me for the ride. It's going to be an adventure. I can't even imagine what it's going to be like. I don't know about you, but when I'm preparing to go someplace, it's weird because I go into this, I think it's almost a self-defeating place that I go into when I know that in the next week or two, I'm going to be traveling somewhere. I find it very hard to either continue good habits where I am, whether it's habits with my diet or habits with my exercise or habits with sleep or whatever my routine and habits are. I tend to find myself a little bit less strict with those habits because I know that those habits and that routine is going to be broken very soon. And so I find that I sort of let go of some of my habits. I've never been a terribly strict routine person by nature. I'm a little bit more of an artist mentality to life. I sort of like to have flexibility in my day, and I don't really like to have everything totally structured. But the structure that I do have in place, I feel that it begins to crumble. Slowly sort of break down prematurely, and it's not necessarily a good thing. I'm not saying that this is something I'm happy about. It's just something I've observed in myself, and it's something that it's been happening like that for many years, and I don't know, it just seems like it's something that's part of my nature. So it's something I've observed, and that's something that I'm experiencing at the moment, which is sort of a breakdown of my routines here. And then, of course, we're in, you know, holiday week. Thanksgiving week is one of my favorite holidays, and it's also Alessandro's birthday this week, and so it's very busy. We've got a lot of things to do. We're in Tennessee right now. We've got a whole bunch of stuff going on here. Maybe one day I'll catch you up on the whole Tennessee chapter, but I'm not going to get in too much to that, and I'm not going to give you a recap on my trip yet to the United States and let you know how that all went, because it's not over yet. So there's still more of this story to be written before I leave. So that's where I am right now. So one of the things I've been doing, and what I want to talk to you about really quick, and this is going to be a shorter episode than normal because I'm not interviewing someone today. And so this is a non-interview episode. I've missed having these more regular type episodes, but I've also really enjoyed the interviews. I think you have too. I've been getting a lot of really good feedback about our interviews. We've had the opportunity to have some really wonderful guests on over the last few months, and it's been just a really fantastic experience. It's been a growth period for me because I'm learning how to be a good listener, how to interview someone properly, and the best interviewers in the world are the ones that make it look easy. And it's not as easy as I assumed that it would be, even though I've always really been excited about the idea of interviewing people. I love people. I love hearing people's stories. And it's something that's inspiring to me. And it's really been wonderful. But today is a non-interview episode. And what I've been doing while I've been in the United States, and even before I came here, is I've been, and this is partly because I have been encouraged to do this by Vera, but also just because I tend to read a lot on my own, and I also love to watch Netflix, and, you know, when I have downtime and I kind of unwind, Alessandro and I love, you know, it's certainly not unique to us, but it's very cathartic to sit down and watch a movie or a show on Netflix. And so what I'd like to share with you is some of my favorite books that I've read over the past couple of months, and some of the TV shows that I've been watching, and all of these are in some way connected to Italy, life in Italy, moving to Italy, etc. So I wanted to share with you, let's start with the books. So I know many of you have discovered the show Searching for Italy, hosted by Stanley Tucci, which is on CNN, and that is a fantastic show. And then that's not what I'm talking about right now, but that show was kind of born out of a book that Stanley Tucci wrote, which was basically a memoir. And the book that Stanley Tucci wrote is called Taste, My Life Through Food. And if you are enjoying that show, Searching for Italy, on CNN, and I believe it's in its second season now, if you are enjoying that show, I highly recommend that you read this book by Stanley Tucci. Now, in the past, I've shared with you that one of my favorite things to do is to listen to an audiobook, especially when it's read by the author. And of course, because Stanley Tucci is an actor, he reads this book himself. And so to be able to hear him telling the story and reading his own book in his own words with his own voice is very powerful. So I highly recommend that you listen to this in the audiobook format. Both versions are great. The hardback copy of the book is wonderful too. But if you really want to hear it through Stanley's voice, and he's a wonderful storyteller, then I highly recommend that you get the audiobook version of Taste, My Life Through Food, by Stanley Tucci. I'm going to just tell you briefly that it starts as Stanley Tucci is a young boy growing up in New York in an Italian-American family. So I believe that his grandparents, if I remember correctly, because it's been a couple months since I've read the book, but his grandparents were born in Italy. I think his parents might have been born in the United States or came to the United States when they were very young. But either way, he is either first or second generation Italian, but he has such a strong Italian influence and so many Italian customs in his family. And he just sort of talks about his upbringing and the way his Italian heritage influenced his life growing up and the food that he had and the traditions. It's really beautiful. It sort of takes me back to my time living in New York and my friends that were Italian families that lived in New York or New Jersey. And they have so many of those wonderful traditions and recipes and heritages. So anyway, the book is entertaining. It's heartwarming. It's touching. It'll bring a tear to your eye in different places, and it'll make you laugh in other places. So Taste by Stanley Tucci. That's my first book recommendation. Another really, really great book that's a new book that I just recently finished is by the same author of Under the Tuscan Sun, Frances Mays. Frances Mays, of course, wrote Under the Tuscan Sun, which was turned into the movie that, you know, most of us have watched. And, you know, whether we like the movie or not, we know the story. Maybe we've read the book. Well, Frances Mays, of course, has written a lot of books, and she's a wonderful author. And her most recent book is called A Place in the World: Finding the Meaning of Home. I find that that is exactly what I'm doing right now. I'm sort of examining the meaning of home in my own life. And I'm really, although I haven't moved nearly as much as Frances Mays has moved in her life, and she in this book, she shares all of these different stories of all of these different homes that she was in, because she's moved so many different times, and she's sort of sharing through her beautiful writing style, she's sharing what her experiences were in all the different homes that she's lived in. And of course, she also includes that famous house, Bramasole, that she purchased in Italy and renovated and still owns to this day, and she still spends time in. So she talks about that house, but she also talks about all of her other houses. And it just really resonated with me. I find myself, when I'm in the United States, and where I'm recording from right at this moment is in the southern part of the United States, in the South. And Frances Mays is a Southerner. I think maybe she was born in Georgia, but spent a lot of time in North Carolina and has a place there. So anyway, I highly recommend A Place in the World: Finding the Meaning of Home by Frances Mays. If you are planning a trip to Italy or a move to Italy, or you're sort of like reevaluating what home means to you, then this book will be extra, extra meaningful and poignant for you as you read. Another book that I want to talk to you about is going to help sort of transition us into the TV shows that I wanted to share with you. And this book is called From Scratch, A Memoir, Love, Sicily, and Finding Home. Reese Witherspoon, who is one of my favorite producers, she's a wonderful actress, but she has, over the past years, she has gotten into a wonderful, she started the production company Hello Sunshine, and then she sold it, and she's sort of taken on this new role in her career where she has a book club, and my goal, my dream someday is to have one of my books featured on Reese Witherspoon's book club. And then, of course, how amazing to have her be an executive producer to help one of my books get transformed into a TV show or a film. But, of course, I have to actually get the book published before I can do that, so that's for another day. But I'm just putting that out there. Reese Witherspoon is an executive producer that took this book that was part of her book club, From Scratch, was one of her books. It's written by Tembi Locke, and it takes the book, the memoir, it's a true story, and it's, she turns it into a limited series, and it's on Netflix. If you have not read this book, it's a wonderful book. Of course, as it always goes, the screenplay version is a little bit different than the book, and that's okay. But I would have to say that I kind of love it that this book was broken down into a show with multiple episodes that allowed to really expand on the story and sort of draw the story out more like a book, rather than trying to cram this into an hour and a half film. This is a several hour long show. And part of the reason why I'm recommending both the book and the show to you is because this is a book about a woman who is in Italy, and she falls in love with an Italian. They get married, and it's about their love story. And it's probably one of the most beautiful and heartbreaking stories that I've read in recent times. It is, if you're not a reader, then watch this show on Netflix. But whatever you do, watch it when you can be with people that you don't mind crying in front of, because this is going to unleash your emotional floodgates. I'm telling you, I don't even remember how many times that I found myself in tears watching this show. And it's beautifully acted, and I watched it with Alessandro. Now, he didn't really love the ending. He didn't love certain things about it, but of course, he's looking at the show through the eyes of a real Italian, a native Italian, so I completely understand that there's going to be some things, you know, from the perspective of an Italian, that this would be maybe not the most... there's going to be some things that are going to frustrate a native Italian, probably, because, you know, that's just the way it goes. When you're making a show about Italy or that involves Italian language, it can be frustrating, but it's worth watching. And the reason I think that this show is worth watching is not just because the story is beautiful and the scenery is beautiful and the acting is wonderful and the writing is really well done, in my opinion. It's also that there is an enormous, a surprising amount of Italian spoken in this show. In fact, I was shocked by how much Italian is spoken with subtitles, of course, but it's such good practice if you are wanting to learn Italian. Now, Vera has been really busy lately with her coaching for Italian language, and also she's been on a really, really sort of mammoth project where she is translating this novel into Italian. And so she's been so busy, but I've been so anxious for Vera to watch this show on Netflix because I want to get her feedback on it from the perspective of an Italian language expert. And so once Vera has had a chance to watch this, we're going to talk about it on a future episode. If you've watched this, or if you watch this after you hear this episode, please let me know what your thoughts are about this show. It's from scratch on Netflix, and then, of course, you can read the book first, or you can read the book after, or you can just read the book or just watch the show, whatever you do, but just do at least one. And again, the name is From Scratch by Tembi Locke. That's T-E-M-B-I. And Locke is L-O-C-K-E, From Scratch, A Memoir of Love, Sicily, and Finding Home. Excellent. Okay, now the final recommendation I want to give you is something I just started watching last week. It's a TV show on HBO Max. The whole name of the show is The White Lotus. So the first season was set at the White Lotus Hotel and Resort. It's a fictional place that was set in Hawaii. So the second season is the White Lotus Hotel and Resort set in Sicily, Italy. And so far, I have to tell you, it is not only very entertaining, but in my opinion, it's very well done. Now, there's some trashy stuff that's going on in the show. I'm just going to call it what it is. If you don't like trashy stuff, maybe you can fast forward through certain parts. It's not the cleanest show. It's certainly not a show for kids. So do not let your grandkids or your kids watch this show. However, if that kind of stuff doesn't really faze you, season 2 of The White Lotus, set in Sicily, Italy, is something that you may want to watch because it's entertaining. It's showing you this absolutely beautiful perspective of Sicily, but it's also got a lot of Italian in it. And so it's another great way for you to sort of brush up on your Italian or sort of like hear Italian being spoken by real Italians, because a lot of the actors on this second season of The White Lotus, they are Italian actors. I love it when they use real Italian actors, and the accents are amazing, and the actors are fantastic. I love Italian actors. They are some of the best actors in the world. So anyway, so that's it. Those are my recommendations on things I think that you may enjoy reading or watching, and I'm really excited to hear your thoughts. So let me know what you think. All right, well, that's all I've got for my segment of today's episode. And let's get into Vera's segment La Vera Italia, and she's going to have some really wonderful tips in today's episode that she's going to share, sort of a random collection of tips. And we're going to be talking about this over the next couple of episodes, just sort of random things that don't really fit into really one huge specific category, but just helpful tips on things that you may not consider or may not realize. We really dive deep into sort of the minutia of some of these topics, which I love to do. And Vera, of course, every single crazy detailed microscopic question that I ask her, she's got a great answer for. So I think you're going to, as usual, find my conversation with Vera very enlightening and entertaining and educational and enjoyable, of course. So here is our weekly segment, La Vera Italia, with our in-house resident Italian expert, Vera Sarzano. Ciao, Vera. Welcome back to another segment of La Vera Italia.
Ciao, come stai?
Molto bene. Grazie a te.
Anch'io, benissimo.
Brava, brava. Okay, so how's the weather in Italy right now? I'm going to be back in Italy in 1 week. How are things? Is it cold?
It's getting colder, yes. We had some snow on the mountains in the north, on the Alps, of course. The very first snow. And it's getting a little bit colder, but not too rainy yet. And I think this is the best time of the year because it's also colorful. You know, still the foliage and everything. Cool, but not too cold. And maybe some fog in the morning. Very, very romantic.
I completely agree. I think this is a great time to be in Italy. And it's one of the most underrated times to be in Italy, isn't it?
It is. That's why it's the perfect time. Because it's only you, a glass of red wine, feeling cozy.
Oh, man, Vera, you're killing us. Everybody that's not in Italy right now that wishes they were, you're painting a very, very beautiful picture.
And that's why you're moving to Italy, right?
That's why I have moved to Italy. I just happened to be out of Italy for a moment. But what is your Italian question for me today?
My question for you today is actually something that I wanted to ask you just because I'm curious, because we never met in person, right? So my question is, quanto sei alto?
Okay, I know what that means. Amazingly, you gave me a nice short question today that I actually know what it means first time. But go ahead and repeat it one more time for us, please.
Quanto sei alto? Quanto sei alto?
How tall am I?
Yeah, that's my question.
Okay. Sono alto sei piedi? Which basically translate exactly to, I am tall by 6 feet, right?
I don't understand why that sounds so funny to you, but yeah, that we switched the word order.
It sounds as strange to you as when I say probably in English, I am 6 feet. No?
Now you're kind of messing with my mind. What's going on here? Every single time we speak Italian or English, the word order is not the same. It's not the only case. So I don't know why this is so funny, but I'm kind of used to it. Word order is
different. You're used to it. You're used to it because I think you're used to speaking English more than I'm used to speaking Italian.
Yeah, probably that's it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let me just try to get it out one time fully. So sono alto sei piedi o 183 centimetri.
183 centimetri. Very good.
Centimetri.
Centimetri, yes. It is correct to say sono sei piedi, but it makes no sense because piedi for us is feet, like your feet, the ones at the end of your legs. After your ankle, you know, it's not a measurement. We don't use it. So imagine like a foreigner coming to you and they say, oh, yes, I am, I don't know, 3 arms tall, something, you know, complete. So it makes no sense. Just forget about feet and forget about translating it into Italian, because I know feet translates to piedi, and it's correct. We say that Americans use piedi as a measure, but Italians just don't get it. I'm like, why is he talking about his feet now? Like, is he that tall only when he's on his feet, and when he's sitting is shorter? Of course. So just forget about it. You need to learn the metric system. And that's the good news. So it was an easy question, but it had a trick. Because
it certainly did, because you knew what I was gonna say, didn't you?
Of course. But please, please, please learn that, because when you're here and you're asking for direction, maybe you're asking where your hotel is, and people will say, oh, 500 meters, and you have no idea. It could be 2 hours walking or 1 minute. You don't know. You need to get familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't speak Italian. I mean, that doesn't matter. Even if you're asking for directions in English, Italians will tell you 500 meters. And same thing for the weight, maybe your luggage weight or things like that at the airport. We talk about kilograms, and you need to have an idea. It's actually pretty easy. You can go online and find and just learn. But that's my first tip for you today. Learn and get familiar with the metric system if you don't know how to use it, because that's the only one we use here.
Let's see. Can you tell me again how tall you are?
1 metro e 68. 1 metro e 68. 5'6".
Oh, you're 5'6". So do you think that you're short, or do you think you're tall in Italy?
No, I'm on the taller side, probably. Not very tall. That would be over 170 centimeters. But yeah, like average.
I think you're definitely, you're the height of an average American woman, because Americans are typically a little taller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think 5'6 or 5'7 is somewhere around average for women, I believe. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's men. Maybe women are a little shorter, but you are tall. So what is our segment, La Vera Italia segment, about today? What are you bringing to the table today for us?
Well, I don't have a specific topic. I will just share some random facts, random things I think you should know when you are in Italy. And not only if you're moving to Italy, but even if you're just coming here for a short holiday or whatever, just things I think you might find useful. And I decided to start like talking about shopping in Italy, because of course, most of you come here and just get into the shop and start trying on all these beautiful Italian clothes and shoes and everything else, or even buy souvenirs, terracotta, and so on. So the very first thing I want you to know is that you will be given a receipt, and you have to take it, and you have to keep it. And you cannot, I mean, you can, but they will tell you no. You cannot say, I don't need it, please. I don't need the receipt. Just keep it. It's the law. So shop owners have to, must give you your receipt. And if they don't, they could get into big troubles, like have the police getting there and get a big tickets or fines, because that receipt is not just a little piece of paper. It's the proof that they paid taxes on what they sold. So shop owners really must issue the receipt, and you are supposed to keep it with you. Until a few years ago, it was the law, even for the client, even for the customer. Now it's not, but the Guardia di Finanza, remember the tax and money police, might stop you downtown because you have bags, and like, do you have a receipt for that? And if you don't, they kind of scold you. You don't pay a ticket or a fine, but still you should have it. But then they go to that shop and they give a big fine, a big ticket to the shop owner. So please keep your receipt, take it, and don't say you don't need it, because in Italy, you need it.
Can't tell you how many times we've had to fish a receipt out of a trash can because I wasn't supposed to throw it away. So I've been taught the correct etiquette on receipts in Italy. So that is very good advice. Thank you for bringing that up. And by the way, I love this topic today, this topic of random tips, because there are so many little idiosyncrasies and random differences that most people wouldn't think about. So it's nice to cover some of those today. Thank you, Vera.
I am very welcome. Now, you had to fish your receipt out of the trash can because, not probably because of this law, this is more for the shop owners. So you're doing them a favor, actually, by keeping your receipt. Mm-hmm. But because in Italy, you cannot return things and have your money back. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. Don't ask me why. I'm just telling you how things are in Italy. I'm an expert on that, not an expert on why, but shop owners will never, ever give you your money back. You can change the thing you bought with something similar, maybe a different size, different color, or even a totally different object. Or maybe if you're very lucky, they can give you like a gift card with the same amount of money that you spent, and you have like until the end of the year to use it, but that's it. You will never have your money back. And most shops won't do the return unless you have your receipt. They want that. So that's why you should keep it. I mean, you're here on holiday, so probably you're not returning anything, but still, if you don't have the receipt, they're like, oh, you didn't buy this here. Oh, I have no idea what you're talking about. And you will not even get the chance to change that thing with something else. So that's why you had it. No money back ever, and no return unless you have your receipt.
Yep.
And then one more thing about shopping in Italy. You probably heard this already, but just in case, i negozi non fanno orario continuato. Shops, i negozi, non fanno, don't do, orario continuato. That's something, yeah, probably you don't have in English, like this very term. It means that they don't stay open all day. They don't continue working, you see, continuato, but they stop in the middle of the day. And I mean, not all shops, big supermarkets and big chains in big cities, they're open all day. But, you know, even in big cities, smaller shops or, you know, souvenirs shops, things like that, they usually close between 12:30 and starting from 12:31 until 3:30 or even 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And that's not the siesta. Don't call it siesta because it's not Spanish. We call it lunch break. So they're closed for lunch break. So don't try and shop on your lunch break, like around 1 or 2 o'clock, because all shops will be closed.
But what is it called in Italian?
Pausa pranzo. Pausa pranzo. So pausa is break and pranzo is lunch. So you see the other way around.
Of course.
Compared to English. Word order. But for shops, we usually say the opposite. We highlight when a shop does stay open all day. So we say, oh, fa orario continuato. Literally, it does the continuing hours. I know it's weird, but keeps working. That's what we say, because that's the weird thing.
Very helpful tip. And it's not just shops. It's a lot of restaurants as well.
Well, restaurants are only open for meals. That doesn't count. It's weird that they're open all day in the United States, for example. But you go to a restaurant when you need to have lunch or dinner. So restaurants are only open for lunch and dinner. And that is between 12:30 until 2. And then from 7-ish up until midnight.
You're using Italian logic there, Vera. So that doesn't always work so well for an American who's like, oh, it's 5:30 or 6. It's time for dinner. I'm going to go to a restaurant. Or, oh, it's 2 o'clock. We've been busy with shopping. We didn't have time to stop and think about eating. Now we're starving. Let's go get some food.
I know. My logic is Italian. This is La Vera Italia, after all. And yep. It happens to me, too. Even if I'm Italian, I don't have lunch every day at 1 sharp. Sometimes it can be even 3:30 because I was busy. But at that point, I don't feel like sitting at a restaurant and having a primo and then maybe a secondo, a dessert, and take my time. I'm in a rush and I'm hungry at that point, really hungry. So I'll just get into a cafe and get a salad, a sandwich. And that is open all day, of course.
Yep.
But restaurants are to enjoy your meals. We go to restaurants to have fun, to spend time with friends or family or even your colleagues. But we go to restaurants to stay there and enjoy our time at the restaurant and our meal at the restaurant.
Well, I happen to agree with those times that people should eat. And I think that the logic, the Italian logic, is the best logic. But it's just good to be aware that your foreign logic about when is an appropriate time to eat and does not apply in Italy.
No, I know. And that's why it's so difficult, actually, for me to come up with these random things, because my logic is an Italian logic. So I would never think I had to tell someone, oh, it's 5 o'clock. You cannot go to a restaurant right now because it's just so obvious. It's like 4 a.m. Let's go and sunbathe in the garden. There's no sun at 4 a.m. So you cannot do that, right? So that's sort of the same idea. That's how counter logic this thing is to us. Restaurants are only open for meals, lunch and dinner, not breakfast. You don't have breakfast at a restaurant. That's another important point.
So that brings up a really good point as well, that don't expect to go out and get a big, huge breakfast at a restaurant either, since we're talking about restaurants. It's only going to be for lunch or dinner. And if you want your breakfast, you're going to go where, Vera? Where should we go for breakfast in Italy?
Okay, you go to a cafe, which in Italian is called bar. But this is an Italian breakfast. You will find coffee, cappuccino, hot chocolate, and all this kind of hot tea, of course, and croissant and all kind of pastries and cookies. But that's it. You could even find what we call toast. So it's like toasted bread with, it's like a grilled cheese, but with ham also inside. But that's it. And that is supposed to be lunch. But you can ask for that even at 7 o'clock in the morning. They will make you a toast. But forget about eggs. Forget about bacon or things like that. In Italy, we don't have anything like that for breakfast. So the only chance you have to get maybe that kind of breakfast is to stay at your hotel, especially if it's an international hotel and not like a very Italian one. But if you own your home away from home here, or if you're going to an Airbnb or just, you know, friend's place, then you have to stick to just a coffee for breakfast like we do.
Something I find interesting is that sandwich that you just described that you can get for breakfast, but is oftentimes found at a bar in Italy for lunch, that you call a toast. Now, yes. That's an English word.
It is.
But see, Americans would call that a panini.
You're not serious. I thought panini were like round, like our panini, round.
It's the exact thing that a toast is. I learned what un toast, I learned what that sandwich was in Napoli with Alessandro. And so I didn't know what they were. And now I think they're wonderful. But in the United States, any pressed sandwich like that, that's not a grilled cheese sandwich. But anytime you use a pressed thing, Americans think that they're being so elegant or chic by calling it a panini.
Well, first of all, panini is the plural. So you only say panini if you're having more than one. It should be panino one.
Exactly.
But in Italian, we call that panino tostato if it's pressed. It's the kind of bread that matters. When you say panini, the American version, is that the square bread that just, or any kind of bread?
But it just matters that it was pressed, that it was pressed down.
Okay, so that's very important. We use the English word, pronounced in Italian, tost, just for the square bread, the one that has a little crust around it, that kind of bread, which is American bread to us. So that's why we use the English toast. So only with that kind of bread. Any other kind of sandwich, if we eat it cold, it's called panino. And if it's warmed up, either in a press or in the oven for a little bit, then it's panino caldo or panino tostato. Tostato, so the Italian word. So now we are there. So panino for you is not that wrong. And we say toast only when we use the so-called pan carré. We use a French word in this case, but it's the square bread sliced.
Exactly. So if you're going to order correctly in Italian, make sure you say un panino per favore instead of un panini, because that would be the same as saying, then you've got everything all mixed up because you're asking for multiple sandwiches, but you're asking with the wrong article, right?
Correct. You're saying one sandwiches. And so the other person would be like, okay, one or two or five. I don't know.
Right. Okay. Well, that's an interesting little diversion. Thanks for humoring me on that one. I find that to be one of those fascinating differences. But okay, what is the next item on your list, Vera?
Well, it was actually eating out in Italy, because of course you're shopping and then you're hungry and you're going to a restaurant. But you see, I have different things written down on my list. So that's perfect, because there are so many weird things about Italy. Well, the first one, I will actually start from a question for you. Once again, I love this thing. So let's say you have friends over for dinner at your place, or maybe your boss. Would you ever tell them, thank you, see you tomorrow, you overstayed your welcome, bye? Or would you just wait for them to, you know, politely at one point stand up and go away?
And if you're in the United States and you don't ever want that person to come back to your house again, then yes, you would tell them that they've overstayed their welcome and please leave.
Okay, good. The same things happens in Italy, of course. We would never tell anyone you overstayed your welcome, bye-bye, unless we hate that person and we don't want to see them again, right? And that's why when you're eating at a restaurant, you're eating at someone's place, the owners will never, ever bring you the check unless you ask for it. Because bringing you the check is like telling you, go away, I'm closing. You overstayed your welcome. You're done. You're not having anything else here tonight. This is your check. This is your bill. Go home. That's why you have to ask for the bill. Otherwise, you will stay at that restaurant until 2 a.m.
That's good to know. Yep. I think in the United States, it doesn't happen that way. I know we're talking about Italy. I'm just saying that in the United States, so just so you know, when you visit the United States and you have visited before, usually it's handled something like this, sort of push it across the table towards you, or they just leave it on the edge of the table whenever you're ready. No hurry. Like they try to tell you, like, I'm not trying to push you out. They probably are.
But saying, I am.
Right. I really need this table for another guest. But
there are two main reasons why in Italy we would never do that. First of all, usually restaurants, especially smaller ones and real restaurants, you know, they don't have double bookings for the night. You book your table and it's yours all night long, because we spend a lot of time at the table. It's not that we eat that much. I mean, probably more courses than you're used to, but it's not the amount of food. It's the amount of chit chat we do in between. A meal, especially when you're out in a restaurant, so you're with your friends and you go there to spend time with them, it literally takes hours. I mean, at least 3 hours, 2.5, 3 hours. That's the minimum we stay at a restaurant usually. So obviously they don't need that table for someone else. And that's regular Italian. Okay, so that's what happens. And the owner, the chef, they really know you and they want you to feel home. And that's why they won't bring you the check unless you ask for it. Because it's the guest who at one point says, oh, thank you so much. That was lovely. Now I'm leaving. Mm-hmm. So now what happens? We have a lot of tourists here in Italy. Thank you for loving Italy so much. So there are many tourists, especially from Northern Europe or Northern America, who book a table for 7 o'clock, which is like literally when the restaurant opens. So especially in bigger cities like Florence here, for example, they open even a little bit earlier just for you guys. So they have the American dinner between 6 and you're quick. You don't like spending a lot of time sitting at a table. So you have your American dinner, I mean, Italian food, but for the Americans only, around 6:37, let's say 7. And by 8, oh, you're done, you're home, you're already sleeping. And they can get the Italians. And we stay there from 8 o'clock until midnight. So that's why I'm saying usually, in general. So where they have a lot of tourists, maybe they have 2 tables, but they don't need to rush you anyway because usually tourists eat more quickly while Italians take their time. But I've heard a lot of tourists saying, oh, that was weird. We were there waiting and waiting and waiting and we never got our check. I was like, did you ask for it? No, that's why. So you need to ask for the check for the bill.
A wonderful little ceremony of bringing the check and then asking if you would like an amato.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And of course, you could do that just pretending with your friends that you're going to the toilet, but you're sneaking out and pay for everyone because you want to do that. But then you're missing the most amazing part of an Italian dinner, fighting over who's going to pay and how. No, offro io. No, ma ci mancherebbe, già offerto l'altra volta. No, sicuro, pago io. All this thing, you want to miss this? Really?
Now, that's a lovely thing. Now, okay, I've got 2 more random questions because we're just drilling down into minute details here. Let's say that you are not one of those people who likes to drink Amaro, okay? Mm-hmm. The waiter or the waitress has just brought you, the cameriere has just brought you your bill, conto, and they offer you un amaro. What if you don't drink an amaro? Is it inappropriate to say un caffè, per favore?
It's not inappropriate. You can say, oh no, for me, just coffee, please. But then once again here, it depends. Usually we order coffee before we ask for the check. So it's too late to ask for that. Sometimes we do it together and we ask the waiter, could you bring the check and coffees? So sometimes they offer the coffee or sometimes, but I mean, it's just pretty normal in a party of 10, maybe 6 say, oh yes, please. I would love an amaro. And 4 just, oh, I'm fine. Thank you. And don't get anything.
I kind of thought that was the case, but I just wanted to check. And then it's very common for, in the United States and other places I've been in the world, to split the check. Is that something that's done in Italy? Do you split the check? Or is it just usually one check and everybody throws in cash or if they want to help out? How does that work?
Okay, so obviously it depends on who you're going to the restaurant with and so on. But let's say it's a bunch of friends. So we usually agree earlier on how to pay. And so the check is one. Restaurants don't write separate checks for everyone. Okay. So the check is one. Then people decide, the friends on the table decide if they pay ognuno il suo. So each one pays for what they order. Like I had this primo for 8 euros, this secondo, and then you count, you do the math and throw your money in and you all chip in, but everyone pays for what they had. But it's kind of complicated, you see, because maybe we had 2 antipastos for the whole table, but then I didn't like that, so I just wanted to wait for my primo. It's kind of complicated. So usually we we say pagare alla romana, to pay Roman style. It's like, okay, I'm really bad with numbers. The check is 200 euros. There are four of us here. Is that 50? Okay, it's 50 euros per person. So we just throw there 50 euro. And it doesn't matter if I order only for 30 euro and someone else for 60, 70. I don't know, you figured that out, right? We just throw in. So that's pagare alla romana. We divide the check by the number of guests at the table.
What if nobody has cash and everybody wants to pay for their own, but they've all got cards? Could you put four cards on?
No, please don't. I mean, I guess we could, but Paolo Rigo should tell you how to do this. It's very complicated in Italy. And now I'm talking from the other perspective. I work behind the bar, you know, and it's so complicated because then they will have one receipt from the register because the check is only one, and then like four or five credit card receipts, and it's also crazy and difficult to figure out. I mean, I think restaurants could, I mean, they are allowed to do that. So to take five different credit cards, we just don't. So we say, oh no, that's not possible. Sorry. So usually when you go to the restaurant, you either know you're going there, so you take some cash with you, or just one pays for everyone and then their friends can send them money or, you know, PayPal or whatever, or just pay them back. But usually what we do, unless you're really very young, like students, but when we are adult, it's usually alla romana, and then one pays and the other one give the money to the person who paid. So it's easier for everyone. Or even better, if it's just, let's say you're a couple and you have friends that are also a couple, it's always you going out for dinner. So maybe this time I pay, next time you pay.
Italy is a little bit more of a cash-friendly country and more of a cash-centric country, meaning literally using cash more than cards. I know cards are becoming much more common, and the law has changed a bit, so you have to use cards. So you have to accept cards now, I think, everywhere. Yeah.
Yes.
That's a new law, right? So just remember, if you're going to a restaurant, at least at this moment, and you're going to be in a large group and you're not planning to pay for everybody, and you don't have that prearranged, just bring cash so you can cover at least your own cost.
Yeah, that would be perfect. And remember, there is one last thing about the check in Italy, and that's my next point there. There is also a fee that you pay. In Italian, it's called coperto. So it's like covered. That's the literal translation. But basically, you pay for bread, and the fact that you're using their table, their clothes and napkins, and you're paying your part for the dishwasher and everything else. So the service, but not the service like the waiter. That's a different thing. It's like the fact that you're using their stuff. And it's not a hidden fee. Every single menu states how much the coperto is. It's between 1.50, so 1.50 euro, or 2, maybe 3 euro per person in a very fancy restaurant. And it's always written either on the first or the last page of your menu, so you know that. So if you're deciding to go with each one pays for what they had, you have to count your primo, your dolce, and your coperto.
So it's not a tip. Don't get it confused with an American tip. It's just sort of a service fee.
Exactly. It's not the tip. It's just for the restaurant. It's part of the bill.
I would like to just quickly touch on the topic of tipping, because I have sort of a very mixed view on this topic, and I have a lifetime's worth of experience. It's very hard, and it's very hard for especially Americans to get this out of their system. We literally feel like we are sending the message that you did a terrible job, serving us. And if we're on vacation, you know, you're an American, you're with friends or your family, or you're on a romantic vacation with your spouse or your fiance or girlfriend or whoever, and you just had the most wonderful meal you've ever had in your entire life. You had fun talking and bantering with the waiter, and you're drinking wine and you're having, you know, one course after the next, and you're having aperitivo and you're having un dolce, and you just had a fabulous meal. The thought of not leaving a generous tip for that kind of an experience on a vacation is so foreign to most of us that we just don't even know what to do about it. And so a lot of times we'll just leave money anyway. But here's my question for you, Vera. They don't expect it from Italians. I know they don't expect it from native Italians. But if an American group or couple is there and they're clearly American and they don't leave a tip, are they secretly considered stingy foreigners, stingy Americans? What do you think about that?
Okay. I've been working with tourists for years, so not in restaurants, but sort of. So I had my fair share of tips. So I know what I'm talking about here. And I blame it on Instagram and TikTok and all this wannabe influencer. Oh, I'll tell you everything about Italy. I've said this before, I know, but this is why this is La Vera Italia. It takes time to explain things, and you cannot just generalize everything and stick into a 30 seconds video. So first of all, restaurants and maybe a few hotel workers are the only ones that even Italians tip. So we leave a tip at the restaurant. We always do. That's the only place where we give tips, okay? We don't tip taxi drivers, we don't tip, but not even cafes or bar, just real restaurants, the wonderful experience you just described there. But it's a very small one. I would say something like 5-10 euros, depending on how many people, but that's it. It's not 10%, 5%. It's just a little token for the waiter that helped you. But, and so, that's the first thing. In restaurant, even Italians are expected to leave something. It doesn't happen all the time, but it's sort of expected, even for Italians. Now, foreigners, especially Americans, because that's your culture, you have the tip. You've been told in the past, I would say 2 years maybe, you don't need to tip in Italy. You don't need to, that's true. But at the same time, here in Italy, people working with tourists got to know you, right? So we expect a tip, especially from people from the USA, because that's your culture. So if you don't, it's like, oh my God, I really did a terrible job. Because usually they just throw money at you. And this time, not even 10 euros. Or even worse, I know it sounds complicated, but usually you go with percentages, right? You say, okay, I paid this much, so I should leave this much, depending on what you're doing, if it's a meal or maybe your taxi driver, the person who helped you with your luggage, whatever, but you go by sort of percentages, right? So what happened to me and some of my colleagues here in the past 2-3 years is that Americans sort of started tipping us nothing. I mean, like 2-3 euros when before it was 20, 30, 50. So something clearly happened there. It was like either these people saying, oh, in Italy, you don't have to, or maybe you're tipping too much. Yes, you are compared to Italians. But now the problem is that people working in tourism know how much you usually tip here in Italy. And you, I mean, in general, are kind of stopping doing that. But the problem is that salaries here are pretty low, not as low as minimum wage for your waiter. So you really have to tip them. But still, inflation is sky high and all these things. And usually restaurants owners or the owners of all these services for tourists are like, yes, this is your salary, but you're working with America, so you will get a lot of money from them. And then you're not, because you're learning that in Italy is not customary, leaving a tip. So you see what's going on here? Italians are learning that Americans leave tips. So they're like, oh, you're fine with a low salary because you're getting tips like if you were in the USA. Americans are taught in Italy, you don't need to, so don't. And now nobody's happy because you feel bad because you're not. We feel bad because like, oh, come on. If this person is American, it's not tipping me. What's wrong? What did I do? That was so terrible. I don't know if you can understand what I mean, but I don't know if there's a solution here, but it's kind of weird what's going on because we know, you know, but they don't know. And So I don't have an answer for you, basically. I can tell you that we will always appreciate a tip. Other cultures, mm-hmm. like in Japan, for example, it's really offensive to give money. Not in Italy, it's not. We really appreciate it. You don't have to, of course. We don't think, oh, those people are really, I don't like them because they didn't tip me. But we are worried because we know that when a job is well done, then you leave a tip. So if you don't, we are like, what was wrong with what I did today?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you're right. I think there's a miscommunication happening. And it's because Americans are getting their information from the wrong sources and the wrong people. We're being told by oftentimes foreigners that moved to Italy that are trying to create a top 10 list of things to not do in Italy, or a top 10 list of things that are different between between Italy and the rest of the world. And it's like an oversimplification of an entire culture, which just never usually works right. But I think, first of all, I think you did an excellent job of breaking down the differences and explaining it. And fortunately, I believe that you sort of reaffirmed that what I instinctively believe to be true is true, which is it's a known thing. They might not assume that someone coming from India or someone coming from China or someone coming from other places in the world, they might not be expecting a tip from those cultures, from people from there, but these big, loud, friendly, over the top Americans that come into their restaurants or their places of business with all this bravado and probably too loud of energy, we do have a reputation for tipping. And if you don't, you're sending a message that maybe you're either stingy or you're not appreciative of the service that you just received. So I think that maybe what we can take away from this, the practical tip on the topic of tipping, would be, and tell me if you agree with this, it's very good. First of all, it's important, especially at restaurants. We're not going to even get into all the different services that you could tip for, like getting your hair cut or taxis or any of that. But specifically right now at restaurants, you should leave a tip if you want to just keep up with Italian tradition, which is leave at least a 5 or 10 euro tip. But even if your bill was a $300 or $400 bill, which by the way, you have to eat at a really nice, nice restaurant and with a lot of people to get a $400 bill in Italy. Would you agree with that, Vera?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So a 400 euro bill or $400 bill, whatever you want to call it, you don't need to leave basically, like a 20% tip or 25% tip. You could leave something like $50 or 50 euros or even 25 or 30 would be appreciated, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think that would be perfect. So we can find a sort of compromise between what we would do as native Italian, what we expect from you, but we don't even want to exploit the fact that you are used to leave higher tips. So that's probably a great compromise.
Wow, Vera. I know that we had even more items to get to on that list, and let's save those for our next episode because I definitely threw off your routine and threw off your momentum by asking you so many questions, but I really love how flexible you were and allowing me to really dig deep into some of those topics. And that was really helpful. So I'm looking forward to finishing off this list of sort of just random tips for life and understanding life in Italy. And we'll definitely hit those in our next episode. So thank you again for bringing your expertise as a real Italian to our weekly segment. It's something that I look forward to every week, and it is always such a pleasure. And it's informative, interesting, and entertaining every time I get to spend this time with you, Vera. So grazie mille.
No, thank you. Thank you so much for bearing with me with my very long answers to your questions. But I love talking. So thank you. And we'll finish next week.
Vera, that was fantastic. Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to getting to the rest of the items on your list that we weren't able to cover today because I asked you so many questions about tipping and restaurants, but I loved the detail. Thank you for going into such detail and sharing with us your incredible wisdom and perspective from the viewpoint of a real Italian and understands the culture in a way that we simply never can because that's not where we grew up. So thanks again, Vera.
Grazie a te e ci vediamo presto. Ciao, ciao.
Ciao, ciao, ciao. Now, that was a wonderful segment. Thank you, Vera. That was absolutely fantastic. I learned so much every time I talk to you about life in Italy and sort of what to do, what not to do. And I love that we get in this podcast, we get to break down things in a not sort of like this, like she mentioned, this non-TikTok, non-Instagram sort of like soundbite versions of advice and how, you know, tourists should behave in Italy, but more of a way about how Italians live and what the culture is really like. And that's why I find this segment so helpful and so valuable to those of us who are planning to move to Italy. So thanks again, Vera. You are the best. Don't forget, you can visit chichelanguage.com and check out Vera's Italian language coaching and all of her wonderful Italian language coaching services at chichelanguage.com. Well, that brings us to our surrounding sounds for this week's episode. And I'm going to be sharing for you today a very quick segment, the introduction to Stanley Tucci's book, Taste, My Life Through Food, read by Stanley Tucci. So here is the 1 minute introduction read by Stanley. And hopefully this will give you an idea about what the book is about and hopefully whet your appetite a little bit and prepare you for reading this book or listening to the audiobook yourself, okay? So here is Stanley Tucci reading The Introduction to Taste, My Life Through Food.
I grew up in an Italian family that, not unusually, put great import on food. My mother's cooking was extraordinary. And there was a daily, almost obsessive focus on the quality of the ingredients, their careful preparation, the passing on of family recipes, and cultural culinary traditions. About 25 years ago, I made a film called Big Night that told the story of two Italian brothers struggling to keep their restaurant going. It ended up heightening my interest in all things culinary and catapulted me into places, relationships, and experiences I never thought I would have. To this day, restaurateurs, chefs, and food lovers all around the world tell me how much they like and are inspired by the film. I am more than flattered and almost embarrassed by their kind words and, in the case of many, their generosity. I am always thrilled and thankful for such moments, as I so admire anyone who runs a good restaurant, decides to lead the grueling life of a chef, or simply takes the time and effort to make a good meal for people they love. My love of food and all that it encompasses only continues to grow every year. It has led me to write cookbooks, become involved in food-related charities, make a documentary series, and it is ultimately what brought my wife Felicity and me together. As it is fair to say that I now probably spend more time thinking about and focusing on food than I do on acting, as is evidenced by some of my recent performances, it seems appropriate that this primary passion take yet another form. That of a memoir of sorts. The following pages offer a taste of such a memoir. I hope you'll find them palatable. More puns to follow. S. Tucci, London, 2021.
Well, that was a little portion of Stanley Tucci's book, Taste. And I think maybe I misspoke earlier when I said that the show that he is a host of was sort of based on this book. I think maybe that he wrote this book after the first season of his show, Searching for Italy. But anyway, whatever order things happened, it's the same person that's hosting that wrote this book, and it all happened within a very short period of time. So anyway, I just wanted to make sure I clarified that. I'm not sure if I spoke correctly when I talked about the order of things there, but anyway, read the book. It's excellent, and I would love to hear your thoughts. On Apple, we have a 5-star rating right now, and we'd love to keep that 5-star rating up. We are the only podcast about Italy right now with as many reviews as we have that is a completely 5-star rated podcast, and I'm really, really proud of that, and I want to thank you for doing that because you're the ones who have left those reviews. Whether you're listening on Spotify or Apple, your 5-star reviews make a huge difference, and I really, really appreciate them. I want to thank our sponsors for the episode today, and that is, of course, ExpressVPN and Babbel Language. During the holidays, Babbel Language is offering even extra savings off of their normal savings. They have some Black Friday events going on, so if you would like to buy Babbel Language for yourself or as someone as a gift, this is the time to do it. During this sort of Christmas Thanksgiving period, it's a wonderful time to buy Babbel Language. You can buy the lifetime subscription. There's some deals that offer 60% off when you use our codes and our links on my website, imovingtoitaly.com. I find Babbel Language to be the best language learning app there is. I used Pimsleur, I've used Rosetta Stone, and I've used Duolingo before I discovered Babbel, and I found Babbel to be the best, and I'm just so grateful that they have generously agreed to sponsor our show. So thank you so much for using the links on our website to save and get a lifetime subscription to Babbel. You can also get a 3-month subscription. You can pay monthly. You can pay for 1 year, 6 months. There's a lot of different options, but I personally, of course, find that the very best deal is a lifetime subscription. That's what I have, and that's what I purchased long before they were ever a sponsor of our show, and I'm so glad I did, because once I master Italian, which Lord knows how long that's going to take, I want to learn French, and I have other languages I'd like to learn. So anyway, check them out, imovingtoitaly.com, and thank you to them for sponsoring us. Also, thank you to ExpressVPN for sponsoring our episode today. ExpressVPN is a really, really wonderful service that allows you to do a lot of things from Italy and anywhere you travel in the world that you otherwise would not be able to do. One thing, it allows you to use public Wi-Fi safely. So you're not going to have your identity stolen, which is a very common thing. It happens to millions and millions of people around the world every year, believe it or not. It's a real serious problem. People that are using a public Wi-Fi can hack into your devices very, very easily. And if you have a VPN, it makes you invisible to hackers while you're using public Wi-Fi in cafes, in public places like airports, train stations, etc. So you also get to use all your streaming services while you are traveling. You can set your location to your home country. For me, it would be the United States. You can set it to a specific region in your home country even. I always set mine to New York because that's where I opened all my streaming accounts for the most part. So anyway, you use ExpressVPN to sort of unlock all your streaming services. Also, ExpressVPN, one of the most powerful things is it allows me, when I have a Wi-Fi network, it allows me to use my phone to make calls and to make and receive calls and text messages for free. Of course, you have to have a Wi-Fi connection to do that, but it is wonderful, and it allows me to not have to change and get an expensive roaming plan for my phone. I literally turn my phone into airplane mode, connect to the internet, make sure my Wi-Fi calling is enabled, and I'm able to make and receive calls over Wi-Fi using ExpressVPN's VPN service. And it's just fantastic. There are a lot of other benefits. I don't even touch most of the time on all the other multiple benefits because I always run out of time. But anyway, thank you to ExpressVPN. Of course, you can find their links as well on imovingtoitaly.com. Check them out. Thank you to our wonderful sponsors for the show. And of course, thank you to you. Thank you so much for coming back week after week and for joining me. I am so excited about the next chapter. After this trip that I'm on right now in the United States, I'm going to be back in Italy with you. And I'm going to be there by myself. And I'm going to go through all kinds of crazy stuff. I just know there's going to be ups, there's going to be downs. I'm going to have days where I'm so excited and happy and have fun, crazy stories to share with you. And then other days, I'm sure there's going to be times that I'm going to tell you, like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? Why did I ever decide to do this? I just know that that's coming. But whatever it is, I know you're going to be there with me, and I'm excited to share it with you. Well, for those of you who are listening live and are up to date, I want to wish you a very happy Thanksgiving, especially if you're in the United States. If you're not in the United States, happy Thanksgiving to you too. Even if you're not listening to this during Thanksgiving season, happy Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is a time to be grateful, to give thanks. Some of you are not religious, maybe you don't believe in God, but I think it's good for us to be thankful for what we have in life. So to stop and really focus on gratitude is one of the most powerful ways to sort of change our perspective about life. Because we, all of us, if you're listening to this podcast, you have countless reasons to be grateful. If you're planning a trip to Italy or a move to Italy, you have a lot to be grateful for. So anyway, happy Thanksgiving to you. I'm so thankful that I get to share this journey with you. And someday when this podcast comes to its natural end, I'm going to be sharing with you in other ways, through books, through YouTube, through social media. And so anyway, thank you for coming back here week after week. Thank you for being part of my listening family. I value you. I'm grateful for you. And I want to thank you so much for going on this journey with me. So wherever it is on that journey with me that you are listening to the sound of my voice today, I hope you're healthy and well. And I look forward to being back here with you next week for another episode. So until then, take care. God bless. Ciao, ciao, ciao.